A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere. Haven,
concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 475. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about the living and the dead. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. So, The Living and the Dead, a BBC One show from 2016, which ran for 6 one-hour episodes, gives us a mixture of ghost stories, folk horror, some other genre elements from the horror genre. It's an episodic show with a sort of a haunting of the week theme, but also an ongoing theme that was sort of building up to a second season that sadly never happened, Brian.
Yes, that's right. So talking about these more episodic elements and what we have a lot of in the early episodes, we have various ghosts and the Shepsoy house and the larger Shepsoy estate and the sort of farming village. And things will not get easier for the Applebees, who are struggling to run this farm and bring in this troubled harvest, and they are bringing in newer machinery, sort of early tractors and combines that are rather disturbing to the local farm workers who know how to do things manually, and this is how they want to do things.
Indeed.
And while that's happening, Nathan is struggling with sightings, seeing his dead son, Gabriel, who had tragically drowned years earlier.
Yes, quite disturbing stuff for Nathan, who seems, as this series progresses, to be developing the sort of mental health problems that he had previously treated himself as a psychologist in London. He's having a rough time of it. That has a knock-on effect, of course, on his wife, Charlotte. Meanwhile, we've still got other ghosts to pop up, particularly from the English Civil War. We've got the restless spirits of murdered girls. We've got strange things appearing in the photography that Charlotte is practicing. So some of her photos develop and figures appear in the background of photos, which is an interesting element of this show. And I'll say that you perhaps, from British Invaders, you wouldn't expect a show that details the stresses of running a Victorian farm. And you might think you don't want that. But actually, it's sort of interesting. And it's certainly, it seems quite hard, Brian.
Yes, they do make it quite intense, and it's tied in with all the characters very much. So getting a little bit more into what type of show this is and where they go with that, I'll give a spoiler warning here that we're getting into things from the later episodes a bit more, or we will shortly. It initially has the feel of a Ghost of the Week type show, where there is a haunting or supernatural type event somewhere around Shepsoy house and estate in each episode. And that includes possession stories and sort of a folk horror vibe, and just slowly brings in some more ongoing elements.
And the folk horror stuff is interesting because we get what I've described as strange rituals around the farmyard, but you could say they're just local traditions to do with, you know, superstitions about getting the harvest in, which is clearly of huge importance. I would say that we also get some masks. We get some weird sort of folk horror-y masks. We get some effigies. We get them standing around huge bonfires. We're leading up to a rather haunting Halloween celebration on the farm as the series progresses into the autumn. And I'm going to say that this show, we've sort of talked about this on and off over the years, Brian, but this is part of what has been described as the folk horror revival of recent years, a sort of revived interest in this type of show and film. I found it quite interesting, particularly because we get this very definite clash in this show between modernity coming from London and the older ways, the sort of more traditional ways of West Country England. I found all that stuff really quite interesting, Brian.
Yes, it's an idea that's been dealt with many times, of course, but they had quite an interesting take on it here. The Applebees are clearly sort of pioneers of new fields with psychology and photography and embracing more automated and mechanized farming. They are definitely people pushing ahead. They are, in many respects, trying to be part of the 20th century or the emerging 20th century that's only a few years away, where the farm workers are quite happy clinging to older rituals and music, you know, sort of folk music and beliefs in curses and dark magic. They are generally friendly and cheerful, but they want to do things in the more traditional ways that they've done in the past. And of course, we start to see this twist come in more than more that involves this woman wearing a red coat that Nathan sees and becomes a more prominent part of things.
And here, as you said, Brian, here be spoilers. I'm not going to give it away completely, but I would say there is a twist in this show. And let me just say that Shepsoy the house appears to be the focus of paranormal disturbances, not just in 1894, but earlier and indeed later in time. There's a sort of timey-wimey element to this show, which is very interesting.
Yes, that does gradually become more part of things, and it's very interesting.
And it reminded me of the house moving through time in Mark Gatiss's show Crooked House, which we quite enjoyed, which told three separate stories in three different time periods involving the same house. It's not unfamiliar to us. We've seen this elsewhere. We've covered Marchlands. It sort of happens in Moondial. It's sort of there in the Clifton House mystery. But there's other shows that we've covered of a similar theme. And of course, you noted a similarity to something else that's rather important in British Invaders history, Brian.
Yes, that's right. It reminded me of Nigel Neill's The Road from 1963, which we haven't covered because it's missing, but it has this idea of a Victorian era setting where they're haunted by the modern day, the 1960s. So the haunting is actually something from the future. And certainly in British television, I think that had some influence on some of these later things.
Very interesting. So it's time for us to start doing our own reviews, our good and bad points about the living and the dead. Brian, what was the things that you liked about this show?
There was a lot that I liked about this show. I will start with direction and say that these two directors did a wonderful job of setting the tone and the spooky feel of things and making this look very lush and expensive as a production. In particular, Alice Troughton on the first three episodes gave this cinematography that did not look like it was done on a TV budget. It looked like a film a lot of the time. So I don't usually start with directors, but it was really impressive. So yeah, the direction especially.
And this show does indeed look great, looks cinematic. It's got all of the BBC things we've come to associate with their dramas. So excellent hair, makeup, and costumes. The way they've used those two period buildings and shot them in such a way that we believe we're in 1894 on this Victorian house and farm. The look and the sound of this show are fantastic.
It looks beautiful, for sure. I will also add that they did some interesting things with the period setting that we don't usually see, especially with how the women were portrayed. When we see people doing manual farm labor, you know, out there with scythes and so on, we see both men and women doing it, and the women are dressed as women did at the time, with, you know, big awkward dresses and so on, but are managing to make a go of it, while Charlotte herself is wearing things that are of the time, but clearly the most practical things that she could manage to have at that time for walking around on a farm and for doing her photography outdoors and in different places and carrying photographic equipment and putting things together and so on. So I thought that was handled really well and in a way that we don't usually see in period pieces like this.
I have to say that the character of Charlotte Appleby and the performance by Charlotte Spencer are both fantastic. And it's quite remarkable to see this modern woman being, as you say, Brian, very practical in her habits and her fashions and wanting to get on and do things. And even though she finds it slightly daunting to be the farm manager, she sort of embraces the role. Obviously, as a woman in 1894, she gets a little bit of resistance, but at the same time, I think she wins the farm workers round. She's a remarkable, capable woman, and it's nice to see such positive female roles in a show like this.
Yes, and they do it so it's pretty believable. So it's not, you know, all of the limitations and problems of the time suddenly disappear, but it shows you how someone determined deals with them. And someone in that privileged place of being married to the inheritor of this estate.
What did you make of the writing? I mean, I'll preface that by saying there's quite a lot in these six episodes, and at times there's an awful lot of sort of horror tropes being introduced all at once. What did you make of the writing from Ashley Farrow and his colleagues?
I thought it was all really well done. There was a lot put into this six-episode series that I sort of would have liked to have seen this stretched out over maybe 2 6-episode seasons. Now, they didn't get their second one, but I would have loved to have seen this stretched out further to have a full 6 episodes in the more episodic style and then the more ongoing stuff focused on in the next batch. That said, I think the writing was solid and I think it was all very well done.
I will note, obviously, it introduces, as I say, lots of different horror bits and pieces. It reminded me of one of the all-time classic movies, Don't Look Now, by Nicholas Rogue. There's the dead child who drowned, and of course the mysterious figure in a red coat who becomes more important as the series progresses. I don't think it's bad to borrow from something as good as Don't Look Now, but I noted that similarity.
Yes, I think there were some influences here. I think, and this is not really a positive or a negative, but I think we sort of have almost 2 different shows here, and I think that works, but we have an opening show where we're mostly in dealing with these episodic things with supernatural hauntings and so on, and we move into what is something of a different show that deals with this ongoing, more supernatural time travel or timey-wimey kind of thing happening with the woman in the red coat and these other things, and it also deals with Nathan's descent into madness, and it feels like we're dealing with a couple of different shows, and I like them both. it would have been nice to see a little more time when they were doing so much.
And I think that is sort of, we are drifting into sort of the negatives here, in that it does seem to be trying to cram an awful lot into these six episodes with A Haunting of the Week and the ongoing story of the Applebees and their life and things falling apart for them. You know, as you say, Brian, it would have been lovely to see a second series where they could have expanded this a bit more and resolved some of the stuff, particularly that set up in the last episode. Sadly, we're never going to get a season two, unfortunately, it seems, which is a great shame.
Yes, I would have liked to see more continuing with this. Really, my only negative with this is that they needed more time to do what they were doing. I wish they had had maybe double the time to cover what they did. Now, that brings us to talk about a couple of things, I think. One is the difference between those, I'll call them two shows, and the other is the difference between the Nathan that we talk about or that we see at the beginning and the Nathan that emerges as we go along.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting that at the start of this series, Nathan and Charlotte have this very loving relationship, which is, you know, depicted on screen for us. And then as the series progresses, it's Nathan particularly who seems to be falling apart. He is struggling with what's going on, and it has its effect on his mental health. It's quite a different Nathan by the end of the series than we'd seen at the start.
Yes, it really is a descent into madness type of storyline that we get for Nathan, which I think worked well. I did like it. I think Colin Morgan played it well. At the same time, I was disappointed to lose that original Nathan, who was so supportive of his wife and was this period character with a sort of very positive masculinity. So I was disappointed to lose that. And I guess another negative for me is that in this sort of descent into madness, they had it include the fracturing of that relationship and the fact that he goes from this incredibly supportive husband to basically the opposite. He ends up hitting his wife, and it ends up being a very different character because of that. I think I might have preferred it if they had done the descent into madness without that aspect, but that is something we see here, and it is done well. It is, I think, interesting.
They pull it back a bit at the end in the final episode, but like yourself, Brian, I missed the couple from the first episodes who were loving and playful and supportive of each other's endeavours. It's a shame to see that in a way fracture because of what's happening in the House of Shepsoy.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful portrayal for period characters with those very nice positive aspects without some of the things that we might have there sometimes. And I very much liked the sort of second show with the sort of ongoing story and these time manipulation things. I thought the descent into madness for Nathan and the way that Charlotte supports him, especially earlier on in that process, I thought that was great.
Now, obviously, it doesn't get the second season. And we have talked about, I seem to remember a few shows we've discussed in the last year or so, Brian, have had interesting first seasons that perhaps weren't perfect, but we thought there was more to come and never got the second season. It does seem very tough for genre shows to get a second season these days.
It does. And I guess that's why they included all of this in a first season rather than spreading it out into two, which I think, you know, would have made for a better show. But yeah, even with all of that they had in there, they didn't get their second season. They ended the first season with an opening for a second one. It was a cliffhanger in the sense that it gives us a hook for a second season. It does leave everything else fully resolved. So I do feel that it's still a satisfying ending, but absolutely, I would have loved to have seen more.
I want an ongoing Ghost of the Week series from the BBC, but we'll have to wait and see what happens, I suppose.
Yes, what they did with that in the first few episodes with this was very good indeed.
So I guess it's time for recommendations, Brian, unless you've got anything else in the pluses or minuses for this show.
I think we should go to recommendations. Would you like to start?
Well, I will. Thank you. It's a very easy one because I'm absolutely going to recommend The Living and the Dead Season 1, the only season. 6 episodes on DVD here for £6. You can't fault it. I think this is a very interesting show. I loved all the stuff they did with it. I loved the music and the titles. I think I love pretty much everything about this show. I just want more of it. So yeah, it's a very solid recommendation from me for The Living and the Dead. What about yourself, Brian?
It will be a strong recommendation from me as well. This was a very well done show. I enjoyed it a lot. Despite what I've said, I really have very few complaints with that. It visually and sound-wise, it's beautifully done. And both the episodic and ongoing sides of it were very engaging and very well done. So yeah, strong recommendation from me.
Splendid stuff. If you've seen The Living and the Dead, if you watch it as a result of our recommendations, then please do get in touch and let us know what you thought of it.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Living and the Dead introduces us to this couple, Nathan and Charlotte Appleby, in 1894, who go out to the Shepsoy estate, which they soon inherit, which means they are in charge of this rural farm, and they are two very modern people for the time who are professionals in psychology and photography and are bringing in lots of modern methods, and their staff, the local farming village, are not very happy with these moves to modernity. And on top of this, we have lots of supernatural elements coming in with hauntings and lots of ways that the dead from the past enter into things, and we build into an ongoing story that has some more time travel or time manipulation elements to it, and the descent into madness storyline, and we move into a big conclusion and a hook for a second series that we did not get.
Interesting stuff, a great show. Do watch it.
Absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time. We're off on one of our side quests where we follow one of the shows we've already covered into another medium. And this time, we're going back to old favourites Big Finish because they have continued the Omega Factor. Quite a bit of listening for me to do, but one that I'm really looking forward to talking about next time, Brian.
Yes, we like to do these sort of spin-off shows, as we call them, roughly once a year, and this will be a fun one to talk about for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join some of the conversations. And you can also follow us on social media with Threads and Instagram. We are British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Please do give us a follow and let us know what you thought of The Living and the Dead. And haven't, please come and check us out as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, where you'll find British Invaders, plus other podcasts, gaming content, Twitch streaming and the like. Lots of stuff to find with the Voice of Geeks at vognetwork.com. Vognetwork.com for the Voice of Geeks.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, don't look behind you, and whatever you do, don't look now.